This is Pure Decking Show number 335 for Thursday, February the 7th. Yeah, I've got nothing. Anyways, this is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and, you know, really working on that Alex Jones impersonation by coughing a lot. I'm Morps, and I'm sorry we missed last week, but I could actually barely talk at all, so, you know, there was that. Tonight, I am drinking a dragon's milk. That'll be good for the throat. And we have a madman. What's up, madman?
Well, I would say I caught whatever you have, but I don't think that can be transmitted through the internet.
But, that's just a lack of creativity on your part, sir.
Dos Equis and Bullet Bourbon. Between the two of them, one of them will make me feel better, or at least make me forget that I feel bad.
And finally, we have RU. What's up, RU?
Doing my civic duty, man. You know, trying to help out with the floods up north, so I'm drinking water.
Nice. Nice. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how, I honestly can't tell how rough my voice is coming across on the microphone, but I was told earlier that it's pretty rough.
So, I'm slightly chubby right now. I get a slight chub, pretty gravelly. A
little bit.
Yeah.
But
you know Morgan Freeman, but you're getting there.
Well, you know, my voice has like not healed every time I've gotten sick like this all the way every time. So maybe by the time I'm 50, I will get there. But I guess we'd start with this one. I'm not going to read it full verbatim because the guy who wrote it obviously used a translator and needs an editor badly. But it's from this website, EsecJuice, which I wasn't really familiar with. But the gist of the article is that a couple of guys in London were doing research on Shodan and discovered that there were these casino player rewards servers on the internet, and they just found this shit through Shodan, so it had already been indexed, right? It belongs to a, well, I mean, the brief from the article here is, following a serious vulnerability disclosure affecting casinos globally, and I haven't got that far yet, I don't want to read the whole thing. But the vendor is Atrinet, and they sell, like, casino loyalty program servers. Like, anybody who's ever been in a casino, you know, you kind of get points for playing games so much, or spending so much money, you build up these loyalty points. And I know when I took a cruise a couple of years ago, I won up a couple of chances at raffle prizes just by playing slots, right? Yeah. And but it's servers for tracking that kind of stuff. But they're providing it, you know, through the internet. And basically, their systems are wide fucking open. You know, half their code is floating around between, you know, Pastebin and, Stack Overflow posts, and their servers their API has no authentication at all. So like these guys were figuring out that they could just like give themselves millions of points and stuff like that. So instead of like, you know, abusing the hell out of the system, going to casinos and getting free hotel rooms and shit, they instead tried to do responsible disclosure to this company. So they involved the author of the article here to kind of act as a go-between between them and the company. And, you know, because apparently the author has some experience with that. I'm not reading it word for word because I'm pretty sure it's been through a translator and it's got some problems. But anyways, it's these kiosks are called Power Kiosk Marketing Platform, and they sell them all over the place, and they get rebranded by Konami, and there was another one. I don't see it in the article, though. Oh, they also had FTP access wide open and unencrypted for the yeah, they weren't segregated into VLANs. These things were just basically sitting out there on the internet. They found their third-party contractors who are all based in India. That's how they were finding the code on Stack Overflow and GitHub. And basically, just as they probed these systems, they figured out, like, there's no security around any of this shit at all. And so the author of the article decided to contact the FBI to help manage the relationship between the two researchers who found this, who were trying to do the right thing, and this company, right? And so they set up a call, and the company initially promises, oh, yeah, we'll pay you a $60,000 bug bounty. All you have to do is sign these non-disclosures and sell all the information you found over to us so that we have the intellectual rights to it so you guys don't release it or do anything, right? And they agreed to that on the phone, but never got paid and never got any paperwork in the mail. And when they tried to reach back out to the company to see where they were, because they initially had taken some of the servers down when they found the problems, well, they had put them all right back up without fixing anything. And they contacted the company and basically got an email back. It's in the article. Where is it? He's got the call recording and everything on the... Where is it? Here's the email. You and your colleagues are responsible for unauthorized hacking of our demo platform in November of 2018, and as a result came into possession of certain information of ours and our customers. You and your co-conspirators demanded money from us in return of the confidential information. We are not prepared to recompense you for carrying out illegal activities and do not respond to threats. So they basically turned around and turned this into this huge, like, we're going to sue the shit out of you, right? But the two researchers figured out that Altranet, or Altirent? A-T-R-I-E-N-T. Atrent? I don't know. I hate how these company names go anymore. They were giving a presentation at the ICE conference in London. So they got tickets and went. And they wanted to go meet the guy in person. And there's video of it. Basically, they went up to the COO of Atrinet, Jesse Guild, and to introduce themselves and try to find out what's happening here. And the COO tackled him, grabbed him by the shirt, shook him, took his con badge from him, said, "You're not going to get this back." And yeah, and then they get this email threatening him, and and this article has been updated since I read it earlier today. Apparently, they've put up statements and taken them down several times. So it's just blown up like mad. But anyways, they're still waiting on this company. But yeah, it's gotten pretty bad because they looked at the CCTV footage and figured out that basically their COO just attacked a kid basically. In the middle of a conference.
That's assault and battery.
Yep.
Watching the video now. I'm glad they documented it all. That's the smartest thing they ever did.
Don't.
At least you have a timeline of this company being an absolute fucking douchebag.
Well, yeah, this article has been updated since, since I've been, reading on it. And, the video doesn't show anything, just them talking. I think they said it's afterwards, but apparently they've got the CCTV footage and everything. So, but it's like, guys, wrong way to handle a breach.
Yeah.
Nice way to get a misdemeanor or a felony charge, though.
It's in the UK.
I think the UK still has don't tackle people laws.
This is kind of
a common thing to do.
Yeah. But They're a lot nicer than me, man. If they had tried to fuck me like that, I just would have dumped everything I had on Pastebin and then sent a link to 4chan.
Well, there were a lot of people calling for them to do that.
Yeah.
Because that is absolutely the worst way to handle it. But they were the ones who originally reached out to the FBI trying to figure out the best way to handle this.
Yeah, I mean, that was, the way they did it was very smart. Well, you know?
The researchers were being professional, and I don't know who the hell they have running their company, but they're being dicks. You don't promise money and then don't deliver, and then you don't tackle the person who's not ruining your company.
So I may have exaggerated the tackling a little bit, but yeah, he did rough him up. So,
you sort of got to expect this sort of thing. These guys sell gambling for a living.
Yeah,
they try to get people addicted. You know, I hope those guys see their 60 grand.
I don't think they will. I think what's probably happened is the COO made some promise and then was going to try to hush it up. And then somebody else in the company was like, hey, what's this? And so he starts just, you know, denying everything. And these guys show up at a conference. And now he's got to make up some bullshit about, oh, yeah, they hacked the company and they're trying to extort us to, you know, try to save his own ass. So... at least that's what it reads like to me.
File fake reports and shit like that, saying everything's fine,
mm-hmm.
but misappropriating company funds for that part of the business.
Yeah, that sounds like intercompany politics to me. You know,
although 60,000 isn't that kind of generous for a bug fix? I usually hear around 10 or 12 when I've seen those.
It depends. Some of the bigger ones absolutely get up that high. There have been a few that are bigger.
Dude, 60 grand for this one, considering the havoc they could have wreaked, the money they could have lost.
Well, you got to remember, it was getting split between a couple of guys, too, so it would have been like 30 each.
Yeah, but imagine these guys, hey, going to some con this weekend, want a free hotel room? Yeah, what's your name and address? And oh, yeah, just tell them you're this person and you want to be comped.
Oh, and that one, you'd be giving them your name. They check your ID on those cops. So you'd say, I'm Madman. Comp me for 3 days.
Yeah, but dude, there's only a chick at the front desk. She's not going to know anything different than what the computer tells her right in front of her.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying those dudes wouldn't be giving me a name. I'd be giving them my name.
What I mean.
So I skimmed over a lot of the article because my voice is bothering me and I didn't want to read the whole thing out. And plus, it's got a lot of editing problems. But these guys were able to set up their own reward server in their house. So,
how
open their API was. Like, man, literally,
these guys had incredible parents.
Depending on whatever hotel had authorized for whatever prizes, it's not just hotel stays. They do tickets to like shows, like major shows in Vegas.
Oh, they could have.
You get Chris Angel
they could have ran that company for millions if they wanted to,
and they wouldn't have known because it didn't. It doesn't look like they're running any sort of security whatsoever.
They never got blocked out making API calls from an unauthorized location and just.
Wow.
And I've worked with people like this, like, you know, the company, right? Who they've never had an incident. They've never had to deal with this. And so they don't understand why they should put any time, effort, or money into security. Because, who's going to fuck with us? Who's going to do this? We'll just sue the pants off of them if it happens, right? And that's a... you know, it's a bit like, well, I'm not going to put locks on the doors. I'm not going to ever shut the windows, but I'll put up a security camera. So if somebody ever steals my shit, I can go to the police and get, you know, with the pictures of them stealing my stuff.
Yeah,
like, yeah, that's great. You're probably not going to get your stuff back. But I've worked with too many people who have that mindset of just, oh, if something bad happens, we'll sue whoever does it. It's like, yeah, good luck. You won't even know what's happening if you don't have any security at all.
Well, so I mean, if these three guys had, you know, a little bit more criminal motives, they could have milked that system for years. Just doing it really smart and slow.
Well, there's the other way, too, which could be that it was intentionally set up that wide fucking open so that these guys could let their friends milk those systems.
Oh, there you go.
Because it's not the company that's losing anything. It's the hotels.
Yeah.
And I guess depending on what you're looking at, the hotels technically aren't losing much. It's a room that they already had empty.
Or tickets, or, you know, casino points, or whatever, drinks.
Yeah, if the casino points can be transferred into chips, that's cash. But, like, the tickets casinos give away, those are for seats they already own. And most places, unless it's super huge, like a super huge act, they don't sell out. And even the ones that sell out, they usually have a set number of comp tickets. So you're taking a comp that some big roller was going to take. You're still not, the company is still planning on that comp going out.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're looking, you're right that from an actual loss standpoint, it's not going to be that much. But that's not what they're going to look at it as. If they ever tried to calculate it up, it'd be potential loss. Well, what would have cost these people to get this stuff instead of getting them for free?
Yeah.
So.
But I was just saying that's one reason why they could be they do it for so long is they're not the casinos aren't going to be able to see it as an actual loss. It'll take longer for them to track it.
Which is why they may have intentionally
a couple hundred bucks didn't do it.
Yeah, they may have intentionally had the back end of it wide fucking open for that kind of shit, so that so they could pull shenanigans and stuff like that. But not no more. That's they haven't fixed it yet. So I mean. You know, then instead of trying to fix it, they're attacking the people who are trying to tell them about it. And if they found it on Shodan, it's not going to be exactly that hard to find. So now that this article's out there, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of other people having some fun with their servers.
Yeah.
So.
Nice catch on that one.
Damn it. I'm so tired of coughing.
Yeah, a couple
although,
more weeks.
I missed so much work. I didn't shave for a bit and show up at work with a beard. Nobody noticed. It's like, what the fuck?
Dude, no one wants to make eye contact with you in case you take away one of their websites at work.
Well, that's...
Don't look at him. Just keep your eyes down and keep walking. He'll shut down the fucking website we want to look at, man.
Yeah, there might be some truth to that. So this next article is from CNBC and it's hilarious. The New York Police Department demands that Google's Waze app stop revealing DWI checkpoints.
They do know that's people using the app reporting it.
New York's police department is demanding that Google remove all DWI checkpoint information from Waze. It says the navigation apps help impaired and intoxicated drivers evade check. I don't know, man. If you're sober enough to use Waze to avoid the DWI checkpoint, I think you're okay. Waze, which is owned by Google, lets drivers and alert other drivers to obstacles, speed traps, road closures, and traffic and DWI checkpoints. City of New York Police Department recently sent a letter to Google demanding that its navigation app Waze stop showing drivers where the city's DWI checkpoints are located. Waze is popular among motorists because it lets drivers alert one another about obstacles, traffic, speed traps, and more. While this can be great for learning about road closures and other useful information, it often thwarts the law's ability to catch speeders, or as the NYPD says, drunk drivers. I'm not going to hit the dramatic sound, but I thought about it. We demand that Google LLC, upon receipt of this letter, immediately remove this function from the Waze application. Acting Deputy Commissioner of the NYPD Legal Matters and Prunty said in her letter to Google. Furthermore, the NYPD requests that Google take every necessary precaution to ensure that GPS data of NYPD DWI checkpoints or other substantially similar data is not uploaded or posted at a future time on the Waze mobile application, Google.com, Google Maps, or any other associated internet web or websites or web portals or platforms under Google LLC, its partners, sponsors, or affiliates control. And since it's Google, they just assume that means the internet. Prouty said sharing DWI checkpoint information is irresponsible and serves to aid impaired and intoxicated drivers to evade checkpoints and encourage reckless driving. When reached a comment, Google did not address this feature specifically, but said we believe that informing drivers about upcoming speed traps allows them to be more careful and make safer decisions when they're on the road. So, I just think it's funny because it's like, It's like, no, no, you can't tell people where that is. That's how we get our tickets out.
I like how they're saying irresponsible. It's not illegal. And that's what the cops need to worry about.
They tried that here, and because it isn't illegal to do that, the cops just changed up. Instead of having one road check that lasts for an hour, they set up 5-10 minutes, catch a couple, and then move on. They're never there for more than 20 minutes. So they're constantly changing, and you'll never... There's no point calling them out.
But they're also missing a key point of how the Waze app works. And I've used it in the past because I deal with traffic problems when I try to get to work in the morning. So I have used Waze. And, it fucking reports where your car is constantly when you're running it. So it's kind of obnoxious that way. So I don't use it very often. I actually uninstalled it off my phone last time because it started annoying me. Because it's like I had it installed, but I wasn't doing anything. And I noticed it was running in the background, even though I hadn't launched it in like months. So, yeah, it's kind of shady how much data that thing pulls off your phone, but that's just Google for you. But what Waze does is it's like any other navigation app. Like, you know, you give it where you want to go, it reads where you are, and it then tries to do your standard, like a GPS path, right? Just like any, like your TomTom or the one in your car or whatever. Google Maps, Apple Maps, whatever. The difference there is that they have all these reports of there's an accident here, there's heavy traffic here, and one of the things it's doing with all that data, it's sucking off your phone about where your car is it's measuring your speed. So it knows from the GPS data that you're on a road that's normally, say, 45 miles an hour, but you're only moving 15, and let's say 3 or 4 people who are in that area are running Waze, it basically can use that data to figure out, oh, there's traffic here.
Yeah. So, Garmin does the exact same thing.
Sure. And so, I mean, it's one of these things where, like, you know, it's a trade-off between trading your data in Waze and getting the reports back. And it will automatically try to route you around this stuff. So it's not even people actively trying to, there's a DWI trap. I better not go there because I just drank these 6 beers before I got in the car. No. They're getting in the car. They're telling Waze, take me home. And Waze is just finding them the fastest route, which means avoiding the DWI checkpoints and avoiding all the traffic and avoiding the speed traps. So it's not that it's even intentional. It's just the way that the damn thing works is that because a DWI checkpoint is by necessity going to slow all the traffic on that road down, it's going to try to avoid that.
Yeah.
So I just found it amusing because you know what's happened is somebody in New York's government, their kid was showing it to them. And it's like, oh, yeah, here, check this out, check that out. And they're like, wait. This is telling people to avoid our speeding traps, our DWI, and our forfeiture lanes. We can't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, I haven't actually used Waze, but doesn't it sometimes tell you what's causing the traffic slowdown?
Absolutely. Because
someone would have to go in and tag, this isn't a wreck, this is a DWI checkpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not Google doing that. It's one of their users tagging that.
I'm going to say the cops could say, stop having this tag, but it's still not going to stop them from reporting slow traffic, go this way.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So I'm avoiding something. I just don't know what it is at this point.
Well, it does have a little, it uses the smileys and the little icons out of that, or emojis, whatever those things are called.
We'll go with icons.
So it uses the one of those that's the police officer, the one from the keyboard. It does show those on there where the speed traps are and where the cops are. So, although when I was using it, I was fairly certain one of the icons on there was, you know, that was a cop, was actually a cop running the app because it was moving in time with that car, with that police car. When you look at the map, there's the cop. You look up over there on the other lane, there's the cop. It's like, I think he's running that app. So,
yeah, he doesn't want to get stuck in traffic.
I don't blame him, but you know, you just gotta that one's a trade off between your data and the.
Yeah, gonna be more things like this down the track.
Oh, yeah.
I've met cops playing Ingress. officer, are you also attacking this node that I'm attacking? The answer was yes. He gave me cool stuff.
Nice.
It seems cops, when they're driving around, they can farm Ingress very easily.
I'm sure there's a number of police who are very proficient Pokemon Go players.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with them playing cool games.
So, next article is from ZDNet and is hilarious. Microsoft's security chief, Internet Explorer is not a browser. Stop using it as your default.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Hold up.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to double check this because I don't...
Can you reread that for us?
Hold up. Microsoft security chief, IE is not a browser. What is IE?
So, well, the article explains it. Is Internet Explorer a browser? According to Microsoft, no. Today, it's a compatibility solution for enterprise customers to deal with legacy sites that should still be updated for modern browsers. It's a compatibility solution. It's just a browser.
I look at old websites with that every other browser would let me see.
Chris Jackson, Microsoft's worldwide lead for cybersecurity, really doesn't want enterprise customers to use IE for all web traffic, even though some organizations that would be the easiest option. Companies in that situation are willing to take on technical debt, such as paying for extended support for a legacy software, but that habit needs to stop in the case of IE, argues Jackson in a new blog post. The perils of using Internet Explorer as your default browser. Microsoft is now saying Internet Explorer is not safe to use. It's awesome. I think they've been saying it for a while, but it's just like, come on, guys. That's awesome.
Great. What's great is this is what got them their antitrust lawsuit, and they're saying don't use our free product that we forced you to have on your operating system.
Well, no, because their viewpoint is they want you using Edge, not IE. Yeah, the main gist of Jackson's argument is you should only use IE selectively for internal sites that need it, pointing to tools like Enterprise Mode Site List in IE 11 that help customers make the transition and limit IE use to where it's needed. Jackson doesn't mention anywhere that customers should use Edge, the soon-to-be Chromium-based browser, nor does he just suggest using Chrome or Firefox, only that most developers are not testing sites for IE. I'm not here to enforce any browser on anyone. Windows gives you the choice in your browser. Yeah, if you tried changing it by default, Microsoft gets all pissy with you when you change your default browser off Edge on a new install. It's like, oh, have you tried Edge? You should really try Edge. No. Edge is for downloading Firefox. Go away. Yeah, Jackson doesn't even consider IE to be a browser, at least in the modern standards-based sense. You see, Internet Explorer is a compatibility solution, wrote Jackson in the blog. We're not supporting any new web standards for it, and while many sites work fine, developers, by and large, just aren't testing for Internet Explorer these days. They're testing on modern browsers. So if we continued our previous approach, you'd end up in the scenario where, by optimizing for the things you have, you end up not being able to use the new apps as they come out. As new apps are coming out with greater frequency, we want to help you do is avoid having to miss out on progressively larger portion of the web. Jackson admits that Microsoft is partly to blame for customers' willingness to take on technical debt. In particular, he singles out Internet Explorer 6, released in 2001, as the year of Microsoft's Windows antitrust settlement in the United States. He goes on explaining it a little bit, but it's basically... Yeah, don't use Internet Explorer, is what he's saying.
It's awesome.
I think all of us are... Cycros, I was playing Enlightened when I played... but I also like Technocracy better when I was playing Mage than Traditions. Anyways, that's just funny.
Oh, yeah, the cop was on my team. That's why we were attacking the same node. They wouldn't harass me.
Yeah, I couldn't remember which color was which. Then he's like, Enlightened is green. The Resistance is blue? Oh, okay. I couldn't remember how it's. I haven't played Ingress since I moved.
Is it still going?
I'm sure it is. Madman, do you still play it?
Nope. I haven't played in a while. For a bit, where I was living, not the Enlightenment, the Rebels or whatever, they were mostly college students. So half the year, half the team wasn't there. So,
yeah, it's still going. A lot of people still Psychro says it's still going too, so.
I owned our entire town for a while.
Nice.
So. But Pokemon cannibalized a lot, and Harry Potter comes out this spring. So they're making an AR game like that for Harry Potter now?
Jeez. I still like it when the Pokemon show up in freeways. I've got to get the Charizard. Across four lanes of traffic.
My favorite was all the churches that put up signs that said, please do not wander through during the middle of service trying to collect Pokemon.
What kind of douchebag would do that?
Pokemon Go
players.
Very
artistic people.
Wow.
Harry Potter could be fun, though. Everybody go Slytherin. Just to fuck with people.
I'm not doing any Harry Potter shit.
Those are the bad guys, right?
I don't fucking know.
They were slated as bad guys in the books,
so,
yeah.
So somebody at work said Slytherin were the bad guys. I'm like, okay, so. I haven't seen the movies in a very long time, so I'm just trying to remember now. Shadowrun, yeah. Page. Shadowrun would be good. Let's see. Next article is from The Verge. Programmer finds ridiculous ATM flaw that lets him withdraw $1 million.
Nice.
Now, in the article, they explain this has been over the course of a few years. It sounds like something straight out of a movie. An unsatisfied bank programmer discovers the perfect scheme for making an ATM spit out free money. But apparently the story is true. The South China Morning Post and China's Daily Economic News report that 43-year-old Quinn Quixing managed to withdraw over 7 million won, which is about $1 million, from ATMs operated by his employer, Haxia Bank, all by exploiting a crazy flaw. According to the reports, the bank system didn't properly record withdrawals made around midnight, effectively spitting out cash without removing the total from the user's account. Normally, that might send up a red flag that a transaction failed, but Quixing allegedly inserted scripts into the system that suppressed those alerts. Quixing started pulling out money on November 2016, but it wasn't until January of 2018, some 1,358 withdrawals later, that the bank discovered the bad code in its systems and brought them to the authorities. Perhaps the most surprising part of the story, the bank didn't want to keep pressing charges once he returned the money. Maybe fearing the bad publicity, because the flaw has already been fixed, Huxia Bank reportedly asked police to drop the case, reportedly accepting Quixing's explanation that he was merely testing the bank's security and was holding on the money for the bank to reclaim, as one does.
No, you know why they didn't do that?
Why's that?
Because all the management in the bank in charge of this would have been punished under the Chinese system.
Oh.
For failure of their duty.
The courts refused, though, and Quixing is now looking at 10.5 years in prison after losing his appeal. They didn't buy the argument, considering that he'd moved the money to his personal bank account instead of the bank's dummy account, and apparently had been investing in some in the stock market. Yeah. So anyways, yeah, we all know what this guy was doing. He was stealing the money. He had found a flaw,
yeah.
And he was stealing the money. But it is interesting that the bank was like, oh, no, he returned it. You can just drop it. He was just testing.
Yeah, because I'd say the bank management's going to be in trouble as well for failure of their duty.
Could be.
China punishes everyone, man.
You know what else it could be? Their systems could be so convoluted and fucked up that any IT guys in there who actually understand them well enough to pull this kind of shit off is not somebody they can afford to lose. It's like, yeah, he was stealing money from us, but he's like one of three guys that understands how the system actually works. We can't lose him.
Yeah, no, that could be it as well.
So,
ooh, the select committee is going to have to find some new management.
Catch there. Morp's working on that voice.
Yeah.
Go for that. Yeah.
Sorry.
No. Good for catching it.
Yeah. I'm trying not to.
Speakers out.
I'm trying not to go hacking straight into the show there. By hacking, I mean coughing, not, you know. But I am trying to get through it fairly quickly because reasons. Next article is from Torrent Freak. YouTube Ripper wins dismissal of record label's U.S. piracy lawsuit. I thought this was interesting. The Russian operator of the YouTube ripping sites FLV2TO.biz and 2comp.com have scored an important legal win against several major record labels in the U.S. A Virginia federal court dismissed the piracy lawsuit after concluding that it doesn't have the personal jurisdiction over these types of sites if they are operated from abroad. YouTube rippers are seen as the largest piracy threat to the music industry, and record labels are doing their best to shut them down. In 2017, YouTube-MP3, the world's largest ripping site at the time, shut down after being sued, and several other folded in response to increased legal uncertainty. Not all stream ripping sites threw in the towel after the fight, though. FLVTO.biz and 2comp.com, owned by Russian developer Tufig Kursmov, remained online despite being sued by several record labels last August. Where other site owners often preferred to remain in the shadows, Kursmov filed a motion to dismiss the case. According to the defense, the court has no jurisdiction over the matter. Only a small fraction of the visitors come from the U.S., and the site is managed entirely from Russia, it argued. The RIAA labels, including Universal, Warner Brothers, and Sony, clearly disagreed. In response, they argued that the operator of FLVTO.biz and 2comp.com downplays the connections to the U.S. and Virginia, therefore he should stand trial there. Yesterday, U.S. District Court Judge Claude M. Hilton ruled on the matter. In a 14-page opinion, he clearly sides with the operator of the YouTube rippers. Kursmov doesn't have to stand trial in the U.S., so the case was dismissed. The ruling is merely about jurisdiction and doesn't make an assessment of the alleged copyright infringements. The court carefully reviewed how these sites operate and found no evidence that they purposely targeted either Virginia or the United States. The sites are available in the U.S., and they have plenty of visitors, but that by itself is not enough. Even if the website servers knew exactly where the users were located, any interaction would still be in the unilateral control of the users as they initiate the contacts, Judge Hilton opinion reads. There could be pure personal jurisdiction if there's a commercial contract involved, but that's not the case here. The site generates revenue from users through advertisements, but that's not seen as a commercial contract, the court concludes. Because your users are not your partner, they're your product. When you're doing website advertising, your views, your users, they're your product. You're selling those to the advertisers, and that's how you're getting paid, at least in legal terms. As the websites are semi-interactive, interactions with users are non-commercial. So you're not paying them. There are no other acts by the defendant that would demonstrate purposeful targeting. The court finds that the defendant did not purposely avail himself to all the benefits and protections of either Virginia or the United States. The court finds that exercise of personal jurisdiction over the defendant would be unconstitutional as a violation of due process, Judge Hilton opinion adds before dismissing the case. In addition, opinion stresses that without personal jurisdiction, the record labels don't have the option to refile in California or anywhere else in the U.S., and then the rest of the article is how they're thrilled with the outcome. I think this is fantastic because this, I don't care about the YouTube ripping and I don't care that it's a Russian site. I just care that the courts are actually respecting proper jurisdiction when it comes to websites because the record on that's pretty spotty, you know, down to actually getting people from Britain, extradited to the U.S., because they ran a website. You know, that's, in my mind, insane. It's like, were they running it in the U.S.? No. Were they doing anything in the U.S.? No. But it was available in the U.S., so you're getting them extradited. That's insane. So
I'm not sure why they're wanting to push it to the U.S. I thought the EU had stricter copyright laws.
Yeah, but Russia's not subject to them.
Oh, for some reason, I was in Germany.
The EU hasn't marched into Russia yet, madman.
Oh, they haven't yet this half century.
Yet. It's coming.
Give it time.
They're working on building their own army after that.
Yeah, you know what that's for.
Yeah, I know what it's for.
Russia and then probably China.
No, it's to crack down on the citizens when they all revolt.
Yeah, that could be it too.
You look at the economics of it, it's not going to last. It can't last.
Well, it's already breaking down, a la Spain, Greece, the results of Brexit.
They robbed one country to pay out another country's debts. Doesn't work. Anyway.
I don't know. As a receiving state of federal funds, it works very well.
Well, last article I have for tonight is one that RU sent me. It's from the BBC. A pair of this is from CES. A pair of shoes have been demoed that track the wearer's movements in real life and mirror their steps in virtual worlds. The Cyber Shoes product is currently compatible with virtual reality games on the PC gaming platform Steam, but there's one big limitation. The owner's endurance level. BBC Click's Omar Mateeb tried out the footwear of CES Trade Show in Las Vegas and played for as long as he could manage. So, and the quote is, "I feel totally knackered."
This is a way to lose weight and play video games.
Fuck yeah, man.
That's exactly what it is. But
the new Battle EA, okay, so 5 years from now, EA's got their shit together again. Battlefield's coming out. You got to do 6 months of fucking outdoor training before you can play the fucking game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I just love this because when the Wii came out, there were people who figured this out really quickly, that it was great to play, but nobody could play for very long because they didn't like holding their arms out to work the motion controllers, right? And there were a couple of guys a few years ago who rigged up Arduinos or whatever they were to treadmills because they wanted to try to run as much as the World of Warcraft characters did.
Wow.
And I think they made it about 10 minutes into the game. Of course, when they were making the video, they tried to dress up as their characters, which probably really didn't help. But
yeah.
You know, that was a long time ago.
But that to me sounds awesome. You think about it. You start playing video games when you're young, and that level of fitness is going to follow you through.
Oh, there was a...
When you think about it...
There was a great webcomic where they got speculative on the future with all this stuff, and they said that nerds would be bullying jocks by 2050.
Man, you think, good afternoon, 4 hour session, playing a first person shooter? Damn.
Depending on the shooter, you're also learning military tactics.
Exactly. But I can see one big downside of this, hygiene. That much sweat and movement. You know, some of these people don't have the greatest hygiene rhythm to start with.
No, they'll have to, because if they, you think they're going to, the HTC Vive already has this problem. You think they're going to make that shit sweat-proof? No. You see, if you keep shorting out the devices with your sweat, you have to buy new ones. That's a form of planned obsolescence.
Yeah. Never thought about that.
So,
but then you can see the taunts already. Your team's a bunch of fat fuckers. You're all snipers. Fatty, fatty.
I don't think it'd be that different from video games today.
You think about it, the whole of the team's playing sniper because they're all fat. They can't move. The taunts are going to be awesome.
You'll just, you know, voice chat will get a lot more awkward as, you know, people keep getting out of breath or, you know, as we tried to play Beat Saber one time on team.
What a fucking nigga you are, you fucker.
Well, I mean, fuck, I played Beat Saber one time while on TeamSpeak, and you all really had some interesting ideas of what I was doing.
Yeah, it was creepy as shit.
Well, I hammed it up after that, too, which really didn't help. So.
I can see movement VRs as really cool, and I think you can see houses having designated gaming rooms.
Oh, yeah, because you need ceilings, the space.
Things like that. Yeah.
So.
But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'd be great, you know, go in, get a couple of hours exercise, playing Battlefield or something. I keep saying Battlefield. I'd say World War III or something like that. I don't think we'll see another Battlefield ever.
Next Borderlands game would be awesome in full-on VR like that.
Yeah.
I jumped off my roof. I'm not supposed to take fall damage.
All right, I got two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is a project called Traffic Toll, and it is a net limiter traffic shaper for Linux. So what this guy does is you can go in and per process in the Linux machine, set allowed connections, set bandwidth limits, set up and download limits, and it's per process. So if you've got like a downloading program, torrent program, whatever, you can give that very limited bandwidth so it doesn't murder like your VoIP connections or whatever while it's running in the background. Or if you just want to control, like maybe you're testing a program out, you don't know what it is, and you don't want it talking on the internet, you can just use this to prevent it at all. And it is Linux-based, but, you can definitely use this for managing your traffic, and it's just a nice layer of control that you could build up on top of a system, especially if you're maybe doing a handful of dedicated servers, and you're wanting to... it's different from QoS because it's written in Python and it's a little bit easier to set up because it's just got a config file.
This sounds like a great thing for if you've got children.
Yes.
Being able to limit stuff, especially if you have a network like a capped per monthly usage, things like that.
Yeah. Well, it also lets you go in and say what ports an application is allowed to use. So if you are running a server, like if you've got several game servers running on one system, and it's something like a Minecraft with a bunch of mods or like a 7 days where you could potentially have these servers that just go nuts and take up too much resources.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. There'd be, Timmy's fucking playing Fortnite or whatever, and Sally's trying to fucking watch 1080p. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they're fighting over bandwidth. Fuck it. You both split down the middle. You only get, 780 or 720 something, whatever.
Well, their example, they're specifically controlling Discord, Vivaldi, and JDownloader. So, and they're showing, limiting it to ports, limiting the amount of traffic that they're allowed to actually go up and down on. And so, in your example, you would be doing all this on the same computer, which is actually not as outlandish as you might think, but... this is meant more for, you've got a bunch of stuff going on one machine and you're trying to keep one program from just destroying your bandwidth for everything else.
Yeah.
So, but along the same lines, the second thing I have for us in Digital Dojo tonight is Pi-hole put out a pretty interesting update for version 4.2. They've got a Docker version of it now. They're working on... adding some alternative blocking modes and an API. So they've got better memory management in this version. They've updated several of the packages. And probably the most important thing in it, they fixed the WPAD problem. So what that is, it's an old problem, but Windows by default will look up WPAD on NetBIOS or whatever DNS system you got. And then it'll start looking up wpad.localhost and then start checking domains if it's joined to a domain. But what that is it's looking for internet settings for proxy. Windows Proxy Automated Deploy or something like that. I forget exactly what WPAD stands for. But this used to be a fun trick you could pull when you wanted to, on a small network, take over everyone's internet traffic and see what they were doing, especially before SSL was a big thing. And that's still a problem that props up every now and again, because you'll have somebody who comes up and they're, you know, they're named their machine WPAD and they're running the right services to do this kind of shit. So usually you fix it at a DNS level, but, and they've added that to PyHole, which I think is a good thing. So plus it's got a Docker version. So if you're running it on another server with a bunch of other stuff, that makes it a little bit easier to run. And the new blocking mode is interesting to experiment with. So it's cool. I've talked about PyHole before. I run one. It's worth running. It really is. And when you watch the logs, you will be amazed at how much traffic, tracking traffic, your Roku, your Fire TV, and your Windows boxes generate. Not to mention your phones. But that one's kind of a given. So.
Yeah, the Roku would probably surprise me.
It would surprise you, dude. That thing is doing amazing amounts of tracking.
Like, it can track what I watch and where I live.
And when you're touching the remote control, and it's scanning your network on a fairly regular basis. Rokus are nasty on a network.
So it's looking to see what else all the other things on my network are doing besides it.
And trying to report them back up to their servers, yes. I don't know when they started doing that, but damn.
Is that little TV box thing you're talking about?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That little fucker gets unplugged the minute I'm finished using it. It doesn't have a power supply.
Yeah. Yeah, Cycros has got the right idea. If you want to run one, put it on its own VLAN. If you're on consumer gear, and actually this is good advice anyways, if you're on consumer gear and you don't need to and you don't have the ability to set up proper VLANs, a trick you can do is go get a couple of cheap Wi-Fi routers, extra ones, and you can have one that you sit right on your cable and then start plug your good router and, you know, plug it into that, and then you can hang other cheapy Wi-Fi routers off that first one to kind of create a DMZ and additional layer of subnetting. And that way you can get some real separation between the various Wi-Fi networks, so you can put all of your less trusted tracker-based whatever on one of them. Like the Roku box could go on one along with Leica. If you've got the doorbell systems or, you know, shit like that, you could run another one separate just for like your security cameras or your Internet of Things devices, or if you happen to have the refrigerator that, you know, orders milk for you or whatever the fuck the thing Samsung was selling a while back. And then, you know, you have the real one with some speed that you put your real machines on. But it's not actually that hard to set up unless you're trying to do servers at home, but most people don't anymore, so it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, a couple of layers of NATing do a pretty good approximation of VLANs. So, but I think we're a little short on time tonight, but that's okay because my voice is about done. That's all I've really got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 Radio site, the subreddit, the IRC. Tonight we've got Cycros, DPView, Iron Angel, and Madman's in there for some reason. Madman, closing thoughts.
I have nothing.
Are you? Closing stole thoughts.
Stole my final thought. Thief. I don't really have one for this week.
Right.
I don't really have a successful thought this week, to be honest.
Well, I can. I'm about out of my voice here, so I think I'm just gonna hit the sound effects and close out the show. Yeah, we're about 10 minutes shy, but most of the shows run long, so sue me. Ah, wrong button. Wrong button.
That's not Pac-Man dying.
I'm not doing another fucking show, dude.
I forgot. Those buttons are fucking sensitive. I was like, oh, there's a little something on the button. Let me brush that off.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
To test this shit fuckery, we chose Australia.